Welcome to WITCAST, the podcast of the Women Inside Trade Network, an international organization that contributes to the empowerment of women and seeks to address a gender gap that still exists in Brazil and in the world when it comes to international trade.
So in this episode of WITCAST, we are going to talk about the critical minerals and the electrical vehicle sector. And to discuss this subject, specifically in the US and in Brazil, we are going to talk with two experienced lawyers that work with in this area. So our Brazilian representative is the member of the Women Inside Trade Network, the lawyer Maria Eugênia Kretz. Maria Eugênia Kretz is a lawyer at the Hapner e Kretz Advogados. She has a master's and she's also a PhD student in the new business law from the Getúlio Vargas Foundation in São Paulo. She is currently a researcher at the Center for Global Trade and Investment Studies by the WTO Chair Program in Brazil, linked to the Getúlio Vargas Foundation in São Paulo, where she's doing empirical research on electrical energy, renewables, and forestry investment funds and corporate arbitrations. In the US, we are going to discuss this subject with Dan Levine. Dan has advised clients in strategic and financial transactions principally involving China for more than 17 years. He is focusing his practice in inbound and outbound M&A, joint ventures, private equity, and venture capital investments and technology licensing transactions.
So today we're going to discuss a little bit about the electrical vehicle sectors and also what is going on with the critical minerals regulations in the US and in Brazil and the impact of those rules in the world and how also other countries are impacting the rules in countries such as the US and Brazil in this topic. So let me begin with Dan by welcoming you here and asking you, so Dan, what have been some of the goals of the Biden administration with respect to this sector, the EV sector? Could you explore the goals that you see in the regulation and if those goals are intention, how the US government are attempting to cope the goals and the tensions related to this sector?
Sure, thanks. I think that's a good place to start. So the easiest way to think of it is that the Biden administration has had two goals with respect to the EV sector. Number one, for reasons to combat climate change, they've sought to promote the electrification of the EVs, of the vehicle sector, and promote the use of EVs. And they've done this through a number of incentives tax incentives and grant money made available and an investment in the sector. But together with that, they've had a second goal, which has been to strengthen the supply chain for batteries within the EV sector. And as one might imagine, there are some tensions between the two because the EV sector is extremely international. It's extremely dependent. The batteries are extremely dependent on China, both for the processing, the extraction processing of critical minerals, and for the historically for the manufacturing or assembly of battery components. So the Biden administration has really kind of faced these a two-headed challenge, or it's a Scylla and Charybdis, that how to promote the use of EVs on the one hand and provide a set incentive for this sector without becoming overly dependent on China to do so. And we can get into some of the technical ways that they've tried to navigate those two challenges.
Thank you, Dan. I think that's a very nice place to start. And I would like to make a parallel now, considering the scenario that you posed on the US and bring it to Brazil, with Eugenia, and then we are going to go back to the US to do a little bit of a comparison. So Eugenia, on the other hand, how does Brazil is engaging in the EV supply chain? As Dan mentioned, that this supply chain is very connected and very linked. How Brazil is dealing with that? And also, is it related to the sustainability and energy transition debate in Brazil? How is this going on?
Thank you for the question and for the parallel, Marina. I think it's really important to show how different Brazil and the US engage in this theme. Brazil is not a really big technology supplier at the EV value chain at all. So what do we have here in our market is very much imported by other countries, be it China with BYD. We see a lot of Volvos here in the streets. So we're getting inside the market, by being consumers, not really producers. We see here a really big challenge of Brazil becoming a part of the electric vehicle value chain, because we have people who don't have the means to buy this new technology, this new product. And the investment in recharging infrastructure to have those cars here is very it's very new, and we don't know if it's getting any better any soon. So we have those problems. At the same time, Brazil has a significant manufacturing base regarding vehicles, and it cannot isolate itself from global industrial trends. So the place that we see potential for Brazil in a kind of near time from here is regarding the battery value chain and being part of it regarding the materials that we need to produce batteries. So graphite, other critical minerals, and etc. This is the place where Brazil has more of an advantage to be part of this global value chain. So just to answer your second question, I think that the EV industry is really linked to the energy transition debate, and it's a way to capture all capital and investments from all over the world. And it's something that Brazilian companies are doing and should be doing. But regarding effects to the energy transition and attitudes already taken by Brazil, I'd say that biofuels, especially ethanol, have more of a place in actually transitioning and using less fossil fuels here in the country rather than the use of EVs and et cetera.
Thank you, Eugenia. And then just as a follow-up of your first comment, I would like to know how Brazil is positioning itself on this technological competition right now that is going on in the EV sector. And do you see that the Brazilian rules, because Dan was mentioning about the US rules, and how the Brazilian system is being created, or are there barriers to the participation, for example, of foreigners in the EV market, despite the sociological situation where, for example, maybe the access to these products is also a barrier, but in terms of regulations, do you see other kind of barriers in Brazil right now?
So when we think about that, I think we have to look back to the geopolitical, and I think we're talking about the geo economy of our times in this context. So what we're seeing a lot as a strategy is especially from developed economies and China as well, are some measures to try to being a winner in the technological race of new products. such as EVs, but chips as well and other things. And actually, it's coming as a reaction to this very representative growth of China in the past few years, and how does it play with other nations, especially the United States, but also other players like Germany and the European Union as a whole. And what we're seeing from these countries are the use of some geoeconomic instruments, such as screening controls, export controls, inbound and outbound regarding foreign investments. And we see more of a control of who can operate in those markets and what products can be sold internationally and what cannot be sold internationally. So when we come to the CHIPS Act, we are talking about that and some kinds of export controls, which are very unique from our time, I'd say, those unilateral measures. And Brazil, on the other hand, we don't have that. We're kind of still in the place where we are trying to attract foreign investments and foreign participations in the country, even for social reasons, since we do have a lot to catch up, really, here in the country. And I've been part of a study conducted by Professor Renato Baumann from UNB and Professor Michele Raton from FGV in São Paulo. And we tried to see what kinds of rules and regulations Brazil would have to try and control foreign participation in those critical sectors in the country. And we could not come up with something specific to foreigners that isn't related to really military, classical military areas or places of frontier and television. So I think this is the strategy of Brazil right now. I don't know if the government is really looking for it or trying to be in the screening more of a part of an active rulemaker in this debate. But I think it is an opportunity for the private sector to attract investments now in this scenario where companies that are not really free to invest as they were, let's say, like 20 or 10 years ago.
Thank you, Eugenia. I think that was an excellent overview in terms of opportunities that we may have here in Brazil for investors and also for potential producers from this supply chain. And turning to the US now, I think it would be interesting to understand how is it going on in the US based on your first answer then of the objectives of the regulations and the tensions that you mentioned and the goals that the regulation have. When we look at the EV tax credits and how consumers are dealing with the EV sector, how do they work? I think it would be interesting to understand how the critical minerals credit and also the content requirements on that are regulated and how they are working in the US, so we can learn a little bit on a country that is ahead in terms when we think about this the regulation of this sector.
Sure. So I think this fits in well. The Biden administration and together with Congress passed what was called the Inflation Reduction Act that amended an existing tax credit program for purchasers of electric vehicles in the United States. This is called the 30D tax credit, and it's a credit of up to $7,500 towards the purchase of a new electric vehicle that is broken up in two components. First, half of the credit, 3750, is available if the battery in the vehicle meets a content requirement for the amount of battery components, the value of the battery components in that battery that have been manufactured or assembled in North America. The second half of the credit is available for batteries whose critical minerals have been extracted, processed, or recycled in the United States or a country with which the United States has a free trade agreement. And the United States has been going around the world to a lot of places and entering into very specific free trade agreements regarding critical minerals, so that minerals that have been extracted, processed, or recycled from those countries could meet this content requirement and make the cars into which those batteries go eligible for this credit. So that's the first key part of this, that it's up to $7,500. Half of it is available if it meets a certain percentage requirement for components manufactured in the United in North America, and the second half is available if the amount of critical minerals are extracted or processed or recycled in the United States or a country with which the U.S. has a free trade agreement. Those percentages begin around 50% next when they start, and they go up over time, such that actually the battery component percentage by 2028 is up to 100%. So you have to have 100% of your battery components meet this criteria by 2028 in order for the battery to be in order for the car to be eligible for that half of the 7,500, and for the critical minerals it goes up to 80% by 2026 or 2027. And both of those, you could see, are driving the onshoring or friendshoring of certain parts of the supply chain. They're creating content requirements to make sure that components and minerals come either from the United States or from friendly countries. There's one more thing that's important here, and that's the prohibition on so-called foreign entities of concern being in the supply chain. And what that means is that no amount of battery components or critical minerals can be produced by a foreign entity of concern in order for any amount of the credit to be available. So neither the critical mineral portion of the credit nor the battery component portion of the credit would be available if any amount of critical minerals or battery components has been produced by a foreign entity of concern. What's important about that is that the way that the definition in the statute said that a foreign entity of concern would be a foreign entity that was owned by, controlled by, or subject to the jurisdiction or direction of the government of China, Russia, North Korea, or Iran. And so for over a year, the industry was trying to understand how the administration would interpret the concept of owned by, controlled by, or subject to the jurisdiction or direction of one of those four countries. And certainly China is the most important among them. The way that they have, as of December 1st, published proposed guidance on this has been the effect of it has been that no amount of battery components or minerals can come from China in order for a battery to be eligible for these credits, or in order for the car to be eligible for the credits. In addition, no company outside of China that's controlled by the Chinese government, and there are two ways you're going to be controlled, can produce critical minerals or battery components that go into a US car battery in order for that battery to be the car to be eligible for the credit. They've defined this in a very specific way, however, to say, well, companies outside of China that may have some Chinese ownership or may have 100% Chinese ownership, but just not ownership by the Chinese government, those companies, again, outside of China, are not controlled by the Chinese government. And so they theoretically could be in the supply chain and produce critical minerals or battery components that would go into batteries of US EVs, and the EVs would be eligible for the credit. And the punchline is, what this means is that much of the EV industry is going to be looking for opportunities to source minerals and components from outside of China, even from companies that have some amount of Chinese ownership in them, right? Could be a joint venture, could be 100% Chinese ownership, as long as it's not the Chinese government. And they've got to do this fast in order for their to be able to put batteries in their cars that would be eligible for the credits. So that creates an opportunity for countries, both based upon their own local technology or their local minerals, or even to partner with Chinese companies to produce critical minerals or battery components that could then be shipped to the United States. There are some trickier elements of this. If there's a license from China, that license can't give the Chinese company effective control over the non-Chinese company, that's seen as effectively allowing China to control that company, or at least allowing the Chinese government to control that company. And again, the key thing is that no minerals or components can actually come out of China. So you can get technology out of China as long as it's not a controlling license, and you could have Chinese ownership as long as it's not the Chinese government's ownership. But if you meet those criteria, then you could have Chinese JVs or Chinese invested companies being able to participate in making batteries or components or minerals that then go to the United States and are eligible for this credit.
Dan, just two quick questions. First, who controls that in the US? Who is the and then the second one, I mean, feel free not to answer if you don't like, but was like, if I don't fulfill with those criteria right now, can I still have the not the tax credit, but I can still have the product with the Chinese inputs in it, right?
Yeah, so the two things. So your first question, we have a statute that was passed by Congress and signed by the president. That's what gives this very unclear definition, a general definition of owned by, controlled by, or subject to the jurisdiction or direction of a government or a foreign nation. And the percentages that I mentioned, those are set forth in the statute. But then, like any kind of complex statute, the executive branch agencies can pass regulations that interpret the statute. And so in this particular case, it's the Department of Energy and the Department of Treasury that have been working together. And actually, there's an interesting story to tell, because that same language for a foreign entity of concern was interpreted by the Department of Commerce and the Department of Treasury for purposes of the CHIPS Act in a different way than the Department Ooh. Of Energy and the Department of Treasury has interpreted for purposes of these IRA, of these EV credits. And it's, you know, kind of a fun law school that, you know, debate to discuss, well, whether that was reasonable or not. The two statutes were passed within a week of each other, and yet the two agencies have interpreted that very same definition differently. To your second question, absolutely. There are going to be a lot of cars in the United States that are not eligible for the credit. At this point, there are only a few that are eligible for the credit. In addition to this, the content requirements and the foreign entity of concern exclusion, there's also a requirement that the vehicle have final assembly in the United States. So imported cars in the United States are not eligible for the credit. And then there's also a maximum retail price for the car. I think they have a higher retail price for SUVs than for non-SUVs. But for cars above those certain prices, essentially the legislation says, if you're wealthy enough to be able to purchase that kind of car, you don't need an extra $75,100 off of it. And then finally, there's actually an income requirement that a family income or the individual income of the purchaser can't be above a certain level if you want to be eligible for the credit.
It's a way to bring also the product to those to the population that usually basically maybe was not going to think about purchasing this EV car, so the electrical vehicle. So Eugenia, I think it's interesting for us to understand a little bit on the Brazil side, because as you mentioned, we are much slower in terms of maturity of the regulation and also the stimulus for having those kinds, this sector being pushed in Brazil for a bigger production, partially because of ethanol and also the incentives that we have on this kind of other kinds of how can I say this? Forgot the word in English. Combustível, fuel. And so my question would be to understand a little bit how Brazil is regulating the use and consumption of critical raw materials, and how this relates with Chinese EV companies, because as you also mentioned, we are trying to attract, put Brazil in this supply chain and trying to attract investors for this sector here in Brazil. Dan also commented on the opportunity for new investors in the US for the inputs and all the critical minerals and materials that may be within the batteries in the US. So how do you see Brazil regulating those?
So to answer your very interesting question, Marina, I would like to go back to that study, that IPEA study that I mentioned a couple of minutes back. And I was saying that Brazil doesn't have regulation just as the EU and the US have. And I could be misunderstood, and people would say, so wow, Brazil is the place that is super liberal and it's super easy for foreigners to invest there. And we know that that isn't the case. So I'm just trying to like make this clear that we are seeing the barriers that we classically have. What we don't have is strict or very narrow and specific regulations regarding foreign investments, just as Dan was brilliantly explaining to us that the US has passed two very specific products that are strategic and very important to the American economy. So what we do have in Brazil, and we always did ever since, I don't know, the military times or our constitution that is from 1988, is that the government or the Federal Union has a very a close control to sectors that we see that are important to Brazil. And this is not just about electrical vehicles, but it's almost everything is regulated in our constitution, right? So infrastructure in general, energy services, banking, financing sectors, everything, we have a really close look from the regulator. And that also happens when it comes to mining and critical minerals. So we do have a very strong constitutional protection of this sector. And we do have a close look from the agency that is specialized in that. In Brazil, it is called the Agência Nacional de Mineração, ANM, which is a mineral like regulatory agency. But it hasn't, like the ANM hasn't been really used until critical minerals have become so important. So back in the mandate of Jair Bolsonaro, our last president before the current one, Lula, we have seen kind of a, and it began really with President Temer. We have seen a restructuring of the structure, of the regulatory structure of the mining sector, and in the way to promote investments, especially foreign investments, but private investments in those sectors in Brazil. And we have always had a really big problem with environmental licenses in mineral and mining projects here. So in 2021, Presidente Bolsonaro enacted the decree number 10657, which kind of tried to make an easier pathway for mining projects that are considered strategic to Brazil to be approved under the mining regulatory agency and also the environmental agencies. So it's lighter, it's faster, it's more efficient, and it's concentrated on those strategic minerals that include lithium, cobalt, graphite, and rare earths. So substances that are very important to the EV supply chain. And so we have these facilitated conditions, and despite they have been really contested in the social context, they are still being enforced. So we have that, which would be like easier for having private investors in this sector. As I said before, and this is the point of our study, we don't really differentiate whether the private player is the national player or a foreign player. So, I mean, we could have some political backlash for having foreigners here in Brazil, but legally speaking, we don't have any rule that makes it more difficult for foreign investors to act here. And that would be something of an advantage to Brazilian companies or to Brazilian owners of these kinds of materials to attract companies, such as Dan mentioned before, being it them alone or being there in joint ventures or surrounded by other players, Chinese or North Chinese acting with American companies by their side or selling those substances to the US. And I think here it's really nice to mention an operation that's being like a really something on the market in this year of 2024 that has just started, which is the selling of a company. I don't know if you heard about it, but it's called Sigma Lithium, which is a lithium company that offers a green product, so like a green lithium, because it's processing guarantees zero carbon emissions and low environmental impact. They have a really nice project with a social project with communities that in places they operate, and they have a mining operation in the Jequitinhonha Valley, which is located in the state of Minas Gerais, and it's being like really, really watched right now because it's today it is almost controlled by a Brazilian private equity fund, but they're looking for someone to buy this company. And what I think it's important for us here, in spite of the craze, the market craze that has been with coming with this news, is that it is being legally structured in a way to profit of all the things that we are talking about here today, because the company is owned by Brazilians, but incorporated in Canada in order to use the subsidies that they're granting for critical mineral companies there. And it's being sold under Brazilian laws and with shares listed on NASDAQ and in Singapore, I think. So that the market is like the most prepared to really value this company. And now Tesla has already showed interest in this project. It didn't go through, but now probably our first contestor for this buy would be CATL, a Chinese battery company, which is really looking for those kinds of, they're looking for lithium, right? So I think it's like an example of how Brazilian companies can profit from this world global situation. But also what I'm trying to say is that foreigners are really welcome here, at least for now, to be part of this project. And it would be good to have those debates in this sense.
Thank you, Eugenia. I think it would be interesting to understand then what should Brazilian companies do about this scenario in the US as well. Because, I mean, we have the scenario you posed to us in the previous questions, and then we have a possible return of President Trump if he returns to office, right? So my question to you is like split it in two. How Brazilians should take this scenario as is, and how should Brazilians take this scenario in case Trump returns to office?
Yeah, well, first, as is, I think Brazilian companies should certainly see that there's an opportunity for them to participate in the EV supply chain, and there's an incentive for US companies to source critical minerals and battery components from outside of China. And to the extent that that can happen from Brazil, I think Brazilian companies are well positioned to take advantage of that. As for what would happen if Donald Trump returns to office, we think we have a lot of questions. But in this respect, I would not expect the statute to change, the statute to be amended or revoked anytime soon, because that would require, unless the Republicans gain control of both houses of Congress and the Senate is somehow filibuster proof, which seems unlikely. If they really would have to get over 60 seats. I think it's unlikely that the Inflation Reduction Act would change. However, it's possible that the Department of Energy under a new Trump administration might interpret the statute differently, in which case some of the incentives may change. I think to the extent that they change, it's much more likely that they will only become harsher towards China. And I think I mentioned before that one difference that the CHIPS Act, the interpretation of foreign entity of concern for purposes of the CHIPS Act, was different than foreign entity of concern for the EV credits. And in the former case, the Department of Commerce defined a foreign entity of concern to be any entity owned by a Chinese person, so anywhere in the world. So mere ownership by a Chinese person, as opposed to the Chinese government, could make an entity a foreign entity of concern for those purposes, but not as the Department of Energy has currently interpreted the EV credits. If Trump came to office, is it possible there could be more a closer alignment between the two, and that they would look more critically at, say, a joint venture in Brazil that merely had Chinese ownership? I think that is possible, and I guess kind of from the contracting lawyer perspective, I think if I were a Brazilian company and entering into a joint venture with a Chinese company, under the expectation that the minerals or components produced by that joint venture could be used in the United States, and there was a change in law, I think I would want to have the ability to buy out the Chinese company. Right, the market and the prospects could substantially change, and I think if that's the sort of thing you could negotiate up front. So if both parties do this with the expectation that these credits would be available for batteries containing those minerals, and all of a sudden one found out that they weren't, then the party should be able to renegotiate or work out a change. So I think one can both try to take advantage of the present and recognize the uncertainty in the future.
Thank you, Dan. I think it's difficult to foresee any kind of certain scenario for the future, so I appreciate your words on that. To finish, I would like just to follow up question with Eugenia in terms of having like EV sector in Brazil and plan to really, like the US and the EU, to bring the industrialization of the sector to Brazil. Do you see this possibility coming anytime soon? And do you think that we have like power and structure to promote the EV industry in Brazil?
As we were talking about, the U.S. has its IRA, and the European Union has the new European Green Deal, and China has the China 2030 plan, Made in China 2030, and they're all very efficient, I say, to promote their EV industries as well as other product industries. And Brazil wanted to be in this kind of trend, and it has launched a program that it's called Nova Indústria Brasil, which in English would be new Brazilian industry. And it is kind of a plan that tries to be a measure for what the government, the the current government has been calling a new industrialization program for Brazil, and it's really it expects to grant or to make available for companies up to 300 billion reais until 2026. And just like those other programs that I've mentioned, it has this sustainability and energy transition discourse that goes with it. So they're trying to promote the sustainable agriculture in the country, a health sector infrastructure, more productivity in the Brazilian industry, and also, of course, the energy transition with regarding to energy generation, as well as products that are linked to the energy transition, such as batteries, critical minerals, and EVs. So the discourse would be of like, well, now we got a starting point, but what the market and the experts have been saying is that we have problems from a really long time, especially since the 80s, our industry has not been really advanced. So we're kind of, when it comes to trade trade balance, we export a lot of commodities and we import a lot of manufactured products. And I don't see a way regarding the way the new Brazilian industry has been structured, that we can really deviate from this problem, because what we could be seeing a lot, it's foreign companies coming to Brazil, using the subsidies and using it for their manufacturers. So maybe we won't be really developing technology here in Brazil, or a national production of electrical vehicles, which I don't know even if it would be recommended to Brazil right now. I think we should use those subsidies very wisely and try a little bit to bargain this capital with the foreign companies so that we can profit from these partnerships in the most useful way and to create win-win situations for everybody. And perhaps this can be done with some technology transfer clauses or with learn by doing processes, so that the national industry could really profit from this international presence here in the country, rather than just like incorporating international our products and keep like a really cycle of having of sporting little components so that the car or the final products would be exported by other countries. And I think relating to China, this is something that Brazil really has to think about, because we're really seeing China as a big trade partner, which is great. But I think we can explore more of this relationship regarding to having more sophisticated products produced here, rather than just small parts that are exported to China for China to export those products, sometimes even to Brazil. So I think that this is our challenge, but still BNDES, with it is the financing bank of Brazil, has those 300 billion reais to be spent until 2026, and somebody must use it, right? So let's use it in the smartest way possible.
Thank you, Eugenia. Thank you for your comments. Last words, then, if you have any comments, final comments, I would like to thank you again for being here.
No, it's a real pleasure, and I think these are tough issues in general. I think my own editorial opinion is that the U.S. has been a little bit reactive in the last number of years in seeing certainly with respect to China any degree of interdependence, which used to be considered a strength, as now a vulnerability, and I hope that perspective doesn't affect how the U.S. sees trade and integration, economic integration with other countries around the world. But I think for all the reasons that have been said, that there are benefits for trade, there are benefits for technology transfer, there are benefits for political relationships among countries when they're integrated, and part of the trend in the recent past has been against that, and hopefully doesn't have too many deleterious effects.
Hopefully. Eugenia, final comments? Thank you again for being here.
Thank you for your invitation, Marina, and thank you for being here as well, Dan. I've learned a lot from you. And I think what comes to me as a final thought here, and that I haven't thought about it earlier, is how Brazil should not be positioning itself in this debate as trying to be something that it's not, right? A developing economy with national security interests and mistrusts and technological powerness to be like really competitive. And how we should be looking looking at those regulations as, and really understanding that them to really find loops and ways to profit from this context. And I think it's really great to hear Dan speaking now in a way that he understands that we're kind of in a different and difficult situation, but that we can have like an open dialogue and see that there are opportunities for everybody on the table. That's really, really nice. So thank you again, Dan.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Marina.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Let me stop.
This was WITCAST, the podcast of the Women Inside Trade Network. I hope you enjoyed our talk and keep following us at www.womeninsidetrade.com.